Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 13th of February 2015. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are: Judge, Council broke rules on Silver Hill, commuter parking causing havoc, and bike hub keeps wheels spinning. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Maria?
Of course. Council broke rules on Silver Hill. High Court's damning verdict as campaigner Kim Gottlieb wins judicial review. A High Court judge has struck a stunning blow against £165 million plans to transform Winchester city centre. Mrs Justice Lang upheld the challenge by City Councillor Kim Gottlieb against his own council, throwing into question the whole scheme. The judge sitting in London yesterday, Wednesday, ruled that the City Council acted unlawfully when it accepted changes to the scheme proposed by developer Henderson. She agreed with Councillor Gottlieb that the redevelopment should have gone out to EU-wide competitive tender when it was proposed to drop the bus station and 100 affordable homes. The decision means other developers are likely to be allowed to tender for the scheme, which had received planning permission last year. After the hearing, Councillor Gottlieb called for Chief Executive Simon Eden and senior councillors to resign. The council was ordered to pay his legal costs. Councillor Gottlieb, who is pictured in the article, also said the judgment throws into doubt the planning permission granted in December. It means Henderson should never have been given permission to submit its planning application in the first place, said Councillor Gottlieb. The submission was unlawful and probably challengeable as well. The judgment said, the council has committed a serious breach of the procurement regime, which is both substantive and procedural in nature. This is the second occasion upon which it has committed such a breach in the lifetime of one contract. It would be an exceptional course to allow its unlawful decision to stand. Whilst delay is always regrettable, there is no pressing, urgent need to develop this site. The council does have time to consider the various options available to it. Councillor Gottlieb added, having its actions judged as unlawful brings great shame on Winchester City Council. The positions of those who led and guided this process are now clearly untenable. The council's leader, Rob Humby, and Chief Executive Simon Eden, together with the Deputy Leader Victoria Weston and the Corporate Director Steve Tilbury, should immediately resign. A spokesman for Henderson said, we are surprised and disappointed by the decision. However, we still have a fully consented scheme that is free from procurement challenge. We will now carefully consider the judgment that has been made before we determine our next steps. The Winchester Deserves Better campaign was formed by Councillor Gottlieb and his Winchester-born wife, Nikki, in June 2014 over concerns over the size and design of Silver Hill. In a statement, Councillor Humby said yesterday, this is clearly disappointing and runs against the external legal advice the council had received, and indeed the initial legal judgment which rejected a judicial review. Officers are considering with legal advisers the next steps, including the possibility of an appeal. Meanwhile, it is important to note the courts have not overturned the decision of the Planning Committee last December. So there is still a viable scheme which has democratic support and could be developed. Councillor Gottlieb himself, a property developer, refuted any suggestion that he wanted to get involved with the scheme. I'm absolutely clear, I would never be the developer.
Commuter parking causing havoc? Traffic havoc in a Winchester suburb could be over after it was agreed to clamp down on commuter parking. Civic chiefs scrapped free daytime parking around Park Road and Abbott's Close after an outcry over disruption caused by careless drivers. Motorists speed and obstruct driveways, endangering children and blocking emergency services, residents told Winchester City Council on Tuesday. Dee Flower of Abbott's Road told the parking committee that cars left by junctions create havoc with oncoming traffic, while wall-to-wall parking blocks vital access to elderly residents. An accident is waiting to happen, she said. My disabled father can no longer visit. Deliveries become impossible. Carers and other help are restricted. Essential repairs cannot be carried out. We urge you to please pass this proposal unchanged and give us back our once safe and strong community. Police have been called on numerous occasions to move badly parked vehicles, Council Officer Neville Crisp said in his report. The council received 22 objections from commuters who said they weren't consulted and couldn't afford to spend an extra £1,000 per year to park elsewhere. Chris Seeley of Park Road called for compromise, saying workers on low incomes rely on free parking and had a right to use the bays. While I'm sure there's no substance to this, he said, it would be all too easy to take the view that this is an affluent neighbourhood attempting to take control of a public space and which could seriously affect the livelihoods of their fellow citizens, he said. A number of those who park all day are employed or do business in Winchester. They raise legitimate questions about the inadequacy of parking and public transport arrangements in North Winchester. The city has lost most free parking zones over the last 20 years, including parts of Hyde and Full Flood. Councillor Chris Pines said walking, cycling and public transport had to be taken on board when making parking decisions. Commuters are being encouraged to use park and ride buses, set to be boosted by new sites in Pitt Manor and Barton Farm, to save money and ease the city centre congestion.
Bike Hub keeps wheels spinning. Winchester's newest community group welcomed around 30 peddlers to the launch of the Winchester Bike Hub. The programme, which aims to make cycling more accessible, saw residents of all ages gather for a pedal together bike ride. Launched by Bespoke Biking founder Heather Evans, on-site mechanics helped get old bikes back in gear for the day at the YMC Cafe at St John's House. The social enterprise received funding from the Hampshire Sustainable Travel Towns Fund My Journey project and the South Downs National Park Authority's Sustainable Transport Solutions Fund. And pictured is a smiling mechanic, Tim Underwood, hard at work pumping up the tyres of a rather smart bicycle, which I assume is held by Heather Evans, the founder.
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Patricia Ap Simon, peacefully in hospital, aged 78. Brenda Burt, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 85. Harold Carpenter, peacefully at home, aged 93. Edward Ivor Carter, at Tudor Lodge Nursing Home, aged 76. Diana Elizabeth Fawcett, peacefully aged 88. Geoffrey, Winifred Muriel Geoffrey, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. Johnston, Angela Pearl Johnston, peacefully. Kendall, Gloria Kendall, peacefully. Pescod, Kathleen Lucy Pescod, peacefully aged 91. And Westbrook, Bert Westbrook, at home, aged 87. Christian comment this week is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Christian comment is written by Rosemary A. Baker this week, and the theme is celebrating all the meanings of love. This weekend, the secular world celebrates St. Valentine's Day. Poor St. Valentine may have been a martyred priest in ancient Rome, but on the whole, there is nothing remotely religious about what happens on February the 14th. It is all about buying presents and cards, having special meals, and going for special trips for and with that special person in your life. Christians might suppose that the Bible has something to say, given that so much of their hymnody and prayers are about a God of love. And this would seem to be at the heart of their faith. The English word love has many different meanings. It can have affectionate, benevolent, strong liking, romantic, or sexual implications. The Hebrew word aheb, most commonly used in the Old Testament, had a similar range of meanings. In the New Testament, however, several different Greek words are translated as love, and they have more specific meanings than our English word love. The first and most important word is agape. This is the Christian love of the Bible. It means affection, benevolence, goodwill, high esteem, and concern for the welfare of the loved one. It is deliberate, purposeful love, rather than emotional or impulsive love. Almost all of the New Testament references to love are agape in the original Greek language. The King James Version of the Bible sometimes translates agape as charity, but charity has now taken on the meaning of assistance to the poor rather than benevolent love. Another word is philia. This means to love in an impulsive and emotional way. It is not used very frequently in the Bible. The word Philadelphia is a related word meaning the love of brothers or sisters. It is often translated as brotherly love. Two other Greek words for love exist. Eros means sexual or intimate love, and storage means love or affection, especially of parents and children. The word eros does not occur in the New Testament, and storage only once in the epistles. To be a good Christian, we need agape love, because some of the things God requires of us are not easy or fun, but need to be done. We need to have filio love, because we need true friends to stand with us, people who are emotionally connected to us and with whom we can share our deepest thoughts and feelings. Lastly, Christians need to have storage love between us, a deep family affection that comforts all and helps us feel connected to all our spiritual family. Yes, let us celebrate St. Valentine's Day, but let us remember all the meanings of love.
We now move to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Michael. Thank you, Michael.
This one is headed A Different Picture of Israel / Palestine, and it comes from Miranda Pinch, Downgate in Alresford. Sir, with reference to Danny Habel's letter in the Chronicle of February the 5th, I have just returned from a visit to Israel and Palestine and spent two nights with a Christian family in Bethlehem. They asked for prayers for Christians in the West Bank who are steadily losing land to the illegal Israeli settlements that now surround them. Not only is movement difficult for Muslims and Christians alike, but their freedom of worship has been greatly reduced, and many of the younger generation are leaving. The teenage niece of the family with whom I stayed told me that last Christmas their family of six was given just two permits to worship in Jerusalem, one for her and another for her brother. Hers was for one day only, and her brother was for an overnight stay. For a family that wants to celebrate Christmas together, that was useless to them and far from being freedom of worship. Danny claims that the number of Christians in Israel is growing. An article from the Jewish Post on December 2012 put this into perspective, saying that Christian population growth stands at 1.3% compared to 1.8% for Jews and 2.5% for Muslims. Some of this can be put down to the comparative birth rates, although the article also pointed out that 20% of the Christian population is made up of immigrants from the former Soviet Union who came to the country under the law of return, which provides for Israeli citizenship if a person has a Jewish grandparent. Danny also mentions Mary Gray's quote from the former Archbishop of Galilee. I interviewed him last month, and while it is true that he asked us not to take sides and to hear both stories, he did tell of the difficulties that both Christian and Muslim minorities have within Israel. Not taking sides does not mean a refusal to highlight injustices and disparity in rights and provision. He explained to me how state funding for Christian schools within Israel, which was always lower than for Jewish schools, has been curtailed still further, creating huge difficulties for them. Sadly, a rather different picture to the one that Danny portrays. From Miranda Pinch.
This is a letter from Mark Griffiths. Gray had more local connections. Sir Edward Gray, Britain's longest serving foreign secretary, who also took the country into the First World War in 1914, was well known for his love of the River Itchen. Your letters page of November the 6th took issue with the Chronicle's Belgarum on the history of a dwelling on the Upper Itchen Valley associated with Sir Edward. It is indeed correct that in 1890 Sir Edward built a cottage for his own use located at the end of the old Lime Avenue at Itchen Abbas, and that it burnt down in 1923. But the local connections do not stop there. A few hundred yards to the west, at the boundary between Itchen Abbas and Martyr Worthy, is another dwelling known as Fishing Lodge. This property was purchased in 1918 by Jack Arnold, a partner in Pink and Arnold, the Winchester firm of surveyors whose practice is today incorporated into Carter Jonas. In 1952, Mr. Arnold became national president of the Land Agents Society. A biography published by the Society at the time states that he lived in the fishing lodge at Itchen Abbas near Winchester, a small country cottage which was built about 100 years ago for the Abington Fishing Club, sometimes known as the Cabinet Club, because all its six members were cabinet ministers. That famous fly fisherman Sir Edward Grey, afterwards Lord Grey of Flodden, was at one time secretary of the club. The Hampshire Record Office holds drawings of a third cottage. These were prepared in 1912 on behalf of Sir Edward by Pink and Arnold under the supervision of the firm's architect, William Donger. Though not known for whose use, this cottage was subsequently built north of the Lime Avenue on the eastern corner of what is today Old Station Road, where it joins Station Hill at Itchen Abbas. Mark Griffiths, Associate Partner, Carter Jonas, Jury Street, Winchester.
This letter, written by Elizabeth Cooper, is titled Extra Care Decision Opens Floodgates. Sir, on February the 5th, the Planning Committee granted permission for the City Council to build a 52-unit extra care scheme on the 0.34 hectares developable space on the Chesil Street surface car park. Many of the 80 objectors and the 176 people who signed a petition of objection may feel that the whole process over the last 10 months has lacked transparency and has felt like a done deal behind the closed doors of WCC. The recommendation from WCC's planning department that this application should be granted contravenes its own long-established planning policies for a conservation area and Hampshire County Council guidelines for the required size of plot for a facility of this kind. At the planning committee, in spite of vigorous presentations of objection from four of the councillors representing this area, and the submission of objection from an ex-planning inspector on behalf of residents, this application was granted. This was given without any rigorous questioning of the criteria which WCC had used to decide that a 2,225 square metre building of up to five storeys was not harmful or lacking in sympathy to its setting in a conservation area. The decision to grant this application appears to have been made on the basis of social need and not an examination of planning issues. Councillor Rob Humby's public statement about the need to improve consultation and communication with the general public on major developments has not been reflected with this particular planning application. This decision, in the face of overwhelming opposition, is likely to undermine the faith that people have in their local council. By ignoring planning policies which are designed to protect conservation areas, it has opened the floodgates to all manner of future development in our city. Elizabeth Cooper, Quarry Road, Winchester.
This next letter comes from Bill Hode, who lives in Worthy Lane in Winchester, and it's entitled Disruption, Just a Taste of What's to Come. So, the recent partial closure of Hyde Street, which was reported in Chronicle January the 29th, has once again highlighted one of the major problems that has not been fully explored or explained by those who wish to develop the area around Station Approach and the cattle market. Day one of the closure brought delays and traffic jams to the whole area, and these continued throughout the week. The prognostication of increased traffic from the Barton Farm development will only exacerbate the problem. Then the effect of closing streets in the area, either but for road repairs, essential maintenance work, or gas, water or electricity, telephone supplies, and further closures relating to construction and development sites will probably, in the not-too-distant future, finally bring Winchester to a standstill. We have seen and heard much about the plans for other projected developments in the area, which continue to cause much concern. However, beyond the erection of a small multi-storey car park and an interesting but implausible plan for altering the traffic flow, little attention has been paid to the inevitable problems that will be caused as traffic flow increases. Additional traffic will further raise the already unacceptable levels of pollution in the inner city. Plans that appear to work or look good on paper often do not fulfil expectations. Winchester City Council is looking to increase office space in the city. This will inevitably attract more commuters here. Does the further resultant increase in the volume of traffic mean that the rush hour will soon start at 6 a.m? One upside of the traffic being at a standstill is that it will greatly ease the problem of parents with pushchairs and the elderly residents of the city in their peregrinations, which include the perilous practice of crossing the road. That came from Bill Hode in Worthy Lane.
This is a letter from Steve Harborne. Will consultation become a charade? Sir, your recent front page report told us how keen the City Council was to crack on with the next big project, i.e. station approach. The article painted an exciting picture of multi-storey car parks, more office buildings, and the inevitable loss of valued open space and well-regarded buildings. Last week, a glossy leaflet dropped through our doors, which explains that this is going to be achieved carefully and sensitively, and that we can all have a real influence in shaping these plans. Some already seem pretty well shaped as far as I can see. We are asked to comment on the best place to locate commercial offices, whilst Local Plan Part 2 proposes space for a landmark six-storey building at the junction of Andover Road and Worthy Lane, adjacent to the Flint and Stone Cottages and other attractive conservation area features. We are asked to comment on how much parking is needed and where it should be. But if the council is going to build on the cattle market Worthy Lane car parks anyway, the option to retain a valued gateway surface car park, which currently works well, is not on the list of options. Nobody can argue with the desire to improve pedestrian, cyclist and traffic flows in this congested part of town. However, with the prospect of 2,000 homes at Barton Farm, consideration of the potential impact of 2,000 plus additional cars heading in and out of the city along Andover Road needs to be built into the equation before the bulldozers move in. Those of us who live in the area and will be mostly directly affected by the decisions of planners and developers really do hope that the soothing tone of the consultation leaflet is sincere. We trust that the offer of meaningful consultation is genuine and that process referred to by council planners as a charrette does not become more of a charade. Only time will tell. Steve Harborne, Station Area Neighbourhood Group, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And Councillor Peter Edgar's letter concerns GCSE result tables. Sir, Matthew Leeming, the head of King's School, is right to have expressed his concern in last week's Hampshire Chronicle with the way in which GCSE result tables were worked out. There is no doubt that the way schools' performances have been assessed have been very confusing. The situation has led to some schools being judged very unfairly by an invalid comparison with the previous year's results. While it is true to say that overall Hampshire schools are consistently performing above the national average, neither their performance in 2014 nor the national average can be compared like for like with the previous year. Where attainment at the end of Key Stage 4 previously focused on achieving five or more GCSEs at A star to C grade, including English and Maths, distinct changes to this calculation were introduced for 2014. Firstly, all modular examinations were removed, leaving all qualifications to be assessed at the end of the course. Secondly, far fewer subjects can be counted in the 5 plus A star to C measure, and any subject can only count as a single result. Thirdly, school and local authority performance is now based on a student's first-time results. Any improvement in grade from a resit is recognised for the student, but not the school or local authority. Despite the impact of these drastic changes, Hampshire's GCSE results have remained high and are well above national averages, which this year fell by 4%. There has been no dip in Hampshire. Although recent education reforms have worked well generally in Hampshire, I fully empathise with the challenge schools face dealing with changes in policy. I taught for 34 years and during that time taught in and subsequently managed schools that were subject to the ideas and sometimes whims of no less than 18 education ministers who all tended to bring in their own ideas on how schools and pupils should be assessed. The fact remains that 82% of Hampshire schools are good or outstanding, and we are proud to retain our role as a leading local education authority, Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, Hampshire County Council.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we look back to the past and begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Michael.
Yes, 200 years ago, February the 14th, 1815, it was reported in the Chronicle that Belgium celebrates first anniversary. A letter from Brussels gives the following account of the celebration of the first anniversary of the deliverance of Belgium. This day will be memorable in the annals of Belgium. It is that in which Brussels was delivered last year from the most dreadful tyranny. For 20 years we have grown successively under the iron rod of revolutionists with red caps whose hands were dyed in blood. The parade was one of the most brilliant we have seen here.
And 100 years ago, February the 13th, 1915, fierce attack in the Argonne. During the earlier part of the week, there was comparative quiet in the Western theatre of war, but on Thursday, the Germans launched a fierce attack in the Argonne. The Allies held their positions, but there were heavy losses on both sides. The Russians have scored a great success in the Carpathians, but in East Prussia they are falling back, owing to the enemy having been largely reinforced. Amsterdam, February the 11th. The Telegraph learns from Antwerp today that some 800 German deserters have fled to the Netherlands, including numerous officers. All these men have been commanded to proceed to the Yser. The German authorities in Antwerp are searching hundreds of houses from cellar to attic, and in many places large quantities of soldiers' uniforms have been discovered. Large numbers of soldiers are reported to be deserting from the Brasche and Merksem forts. On the doors they wrote, "Fort to Let."
And there are two items from 50 years ago, February the 13th, 1965. Pavilion opened at Splendid Service. The final stage of the Splendid Service of Bishopswortham Parish Council in providing a suitable recreation ground equipped with a worthwhile pavilion culminated on Saturday when the chairman, Major R.V. Cartwright, officially opened the new pavilion. Between 75 and 100 people were present. The pavilion, well designed and solidly built with timber roof, has about 1,300 feet of floor space and comprises a large hall, two changing rooms, toilets, kitchen, store, and provision for shower baths. And the second item, BBC Two should be available to viewers in the Portsmouth-Southampton area, including Winchester, by the late autumn, a spokesman for the corporation said in Southampton on Wednesday. The work involved was enormous, and the date could not be fixed precisely, he said. Colour television could not be expected before the end of 1966 at the earliest. At the present time, there were fairly extensive facilities for the introduction of colour, and all the London studios being used at present could be easily adapted.
From 25 years ago, February the 9th, 1990, two separate pieces, one about hospital beds. Hospital beds to remain empty. Hospital beds in the Winchester district seem certain to remain empty over the coming year as the hard-up health authority faces a new £1 million cash crisis. A report this week's meeting of the health authority revealed a £1 million shortfall in the money required in 1990 to 1991. And the report warned members of the need to reduce spending in the new financial year in order to balance the budget. The next piece concerns divorce proceedings of the Member of Parliament, Mr. Brown. For the first time, Mrs. Elaine Brown, wife of the Winchester and Alton MP John Brown, has spoken out in defence of her husband, whose financial affairs are being investigated by a House of Commons committee. In a long, frank discussion this week, the 45-year-old American, the American that Mr. Brown married in 1986, delivered a trenchant criticism of the press, which had given a totally false picture of the divorce proceedings of the MP and his former wife, Elizabeth Brown. John Brown, asserted his wife, is a hard-working Member of Parliament. There is no way you could be an MP unless you were a diligent and dedicated person.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Margaret and will be followed by First Person, read by Michael. Thank you, Margaret.
We're next for Silver Hill Saga. To put it mildly, Mrs. Justice Lang's decision yesterday over Silver Hill has put a spanner in the works. The City Council and co-developer Henderson had been expecting to start building work by April. The next steps are mired in uncertainty. Henderson's brief statement implies it thinks the decision is no impediment to the development. That is unacceptable. The judgment in effect means that the planning decision last December is now untenable, based as it was on an unlawful act. The council has to now take this opportunity to look again at the scheme. The unlawful act happened as a result of a momentum that had been generated over the years, in hindsight, a runaway train that no one seemed able to control. Mrs. Justice Lang has applied the emergency brake. The City Council was keen to stick with Henderson and avoid the EU procurement regulations. The judgment is a wake-up call and the chance to consider what the judge called new ideas. The City Council argued its stance would be the best financially for the City Council. Perhaps it obscured the wider idea of providing something that was the best for Winchester.
This piece is by Khalid Aziz and it's entitled Should We Take Easy Route or Protect Today's Children? We all sign up to the need to protect children. Their very vulnerability brings out the best in normal people. Sadly, as they grow up, they can often appear to be more mature than their years, aided no doubt by the plethora of commercial interests that seeks to engage them, that's code for exploit them, for financial gain. We all agree it is for real adults to show responsibility and not abuse the trust the young put in us. Sadly, this is not always the case. And now society is facing a series of difficult choices when it comes to coping with what appears to be an epidemic of child abuse, particularly of a sexual nature. Latest police figures show that while there has been a diminution of conventional crime, that's burglaries, robberies, etc., there has been an astonishing rise in reported sex crimes, particularly those involving children. There is an important distinction to make when discussing child abuse, namely that of the present and the historic. The question is, should society, indeed can society, give each category of crime equal weight when it comes to investigation and prosecution? In a perfect world, you might argue, no distinction should be drawn. But the world is not perfect, and priorities have to be set, particularly against a background of the dwindling public resources available to investigate such crimes. It would appear that it is a historic crimes which hog both limelight and resources. It's a gift to the more prurient press to be able to demonise rapacious monsters such as Savile and Glitter, or the mighty fallen such as the saintly but ultimately pathetic Rolf Harris, the latter playing to the nasty part that is perhaps in all of us that likes to see the high brought down low. Overlay issues such as concerns about offending minorities when it comes to pursuing modern-day child groomers and exploiters, and you can perhaps see why the authorities almost institutionally connive at chasing historical cases at the expense of modern, current crimes happening under their very noses. When the Oxford and Rotherham cases involving adult males of Pakistani origin first emerged, it gave me no pleasure to suggest to senior police officers those cases were just the tip of the iceberg. The conditions for similar crimes to exist in other ethnic communities are found in most cities. A pressure cooker of sexually repressed males fueled by guilt-ridden religious interpretation against a wider societal background of sexual freedom and tolerance mistakenly interpreted as loose morals. White girls, in the minds of the perpetrators, were up for it and deserved everything they got. Prosecuting such crimes is tough, particularly for a police service that is still underrepresentative when it comes to ethnic minorities. They feel on the back foot. Far easier to go after elderly white perpetrators of historic crimes. But if there is a choice, should we go for the easy wins or draw a line and go all out to protect today's children?
Belgorum's alternative look at the news this week has two items, the first of which is headed Mexican Wave of Partying Students Stuns Onlookers. Forget the Vikings. Winchester was struck by a Mexican invasion last weekend as a dress-up pub crawl descended on the city centre. Around 30 youngsters in sombreros and fake moustaches marched through Silver Hill on Saturday afternoon for an all-day party. The chanting revellers gathered at the entrance to Sainsbury's, shaking maracas and banging on windows. They'd been in good spirits since 11:30 to celebrate the birthdays of Tris Holliday and Greg Barnes and looked set to continue into the night. One partygoer, James Stevens, said, "We're not doing any harm. All we're doing is having a laugh. What can you say? We're young. We're living in our prime." Stunned onlooker Peter Williamson, who travelled from Bournemouth the day, said, "It's amazing. Is it normally like this?" And there's a picture of three of the revellers with Zapata moustache, sombrero and ponchos, obviously enjoying themselves. The second item is headed Walking the Walk, Not Just Talk. A Winchester hypnotherapist made a splash on national radio when he convinced an Olympic heroine to get into the pool. Dame Kelly Holmes was petrified of water until James Mallinson was asked to treat her chronic fear of drowning for a BBC radio show last week. He used a makeshift therapy suite in the studio to convince the double gold medalist she could take the plunge, using a new technique called havening. After 2 hours, she dived straight into the pool and swam 6 25-metre lengths. I looked at the pool, and I thought, right, get in there, she told the programme. I've never swum 25 metres without coming up about 10 times. It's claimed the new technique reverses the brain chemistry of phobias, curing conditions from fear of spiders to post-traumatic stress disorder. Mr. Mallinson, a former Winchester University student who opened a practice in Southgate Street in November, said it was exciting to work with Dame Kelly. Being in the public eye and with the work that we did being broadcast, it came with an added layer of pressure. But I train people to do this myself, he added. I completely managed my emotional state. I've absolutely got to walk the walk and not talk the talk. Now the announcements, and we start with What's On, with several events in and around Winchester. On Wednesday the 18th of February at the John Stripe Building of the University of Winchester, there's a talk entitled Stop Leaning Against the Wall, It's Wet. This is at 6pm for 6:30, and further information can be obtained at 01962 827 322. That's 01962 827 322. On Monday the 23rd of February at 7:30pm in the cafe area of Winchester Discovery Centre is a free talk on the Battle of Agincourt in the series of Discovery Lectures. On Tuesday the 24th of February at the Theatre Royal Winchester there's a talk by Sir Christopher Bland entitled Ashes in the Wind. This is at 6:30pm and further details can be obtained on 01962 840 400. That's 01962 840 400. On Thursday the 26th of February, there is a folk song recital at 7pm in the Winchester College Music School Hall. And finally, exhibitions. The exhibition of Henry Moore prints at the Winchester Discovery Centre continues until Sunday the 1st of March, and the Campbell Foundation exhibition Worldwide Weave is at Winchester Cathedral until Tuesday, March the 3rd. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 13th of February at 7:22am and begins at 5:17pm. On Wednesday the 18th of February, it ends at 7:13am and begins at 5:26pm. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with this recording, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Continuing with items of general news, the first item is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Trip to the Fun Fair led to 60 years together. He won her over on a date by giving away his prize coconut. John and Sheila Long first set eyes on each other during a dance at Eastleigh Town Hall, but romance blossomed on a trip to the fun fair. Now this diamond duo, who are both Saints fans, are celebrating 60 years of wedded bliss since tying the knot at St Mary's Church in Bishopstoke in 1955. John, 83, said romance blossomed not long after returning from national service with the RAF to Eastleigh Railway Works, where he had been an apprentice since he was 14, while Sheila, now 80, was working at Pink's Grocers. The former Toynbee Road schoolboy worked at the railway works for 48 years until his retirement in 1994. Sheila, who attended Fair Oaks School, stopped work at 24 to bring up their sons, Stephen and Ian, but later spent 20 years working in shoe shop Freeman, Hardy and Willis in Eastleigh. The couple spent 40 years living on the Velmore Estate in Chandler's Ford before moving to Valley Park 13 years ago. They are both keen animal lovers and have fond memories of their four dogs, Pip, Sadie, Honey and Tessie, as well as their many holidays in Europe and visiting Ian's home in Canada, where he lives with his wife Natasha and six-year-old son Harrison. John has also enjoyed bowling for the Railway Bowling Club, which he joined at 25. His other interests include making model planes and dressing up for carnivals with veterans group the Romsey Old Cadets. Sheila's interests have included sewing, crochet, knitting and dressmaking. When asked the secret of a long and happy marriage, Sheila said, "We just try to understand each other. It's all a case of give and take. Unfortunately, we can't get about like we once did, but we're lucky to have each of us to keep one another company. The couple plan to celebrate their special day with friends and family, including Stephen, his wife Judith, and grandchild Simon, 28, Christopher, 19, and Megan, 16. And there are two lovely photos of the couple. One in colour of how they are today, looking very happy, and a black and white photograph of them both looking very glamorous on their wedding day.
Approval for extra care housing scheme. Planners say Chesil Street is the right place for homes. Controversial plans to build homes for the elderly in an historic Winchester Street have been granted. A large extra care housing block is set to be built on Chesil open-air car park, despite objections from residents who said it would overshadow the street's medieval and Georgian houses. The plans, including 52 flats, communal facilities and a day centre, were approved by Winchester City Council last Thursday as a measure to cope with an ageing population. Critics warned that the development would remove an important car park and force tenants in mobility scooters to navigate narrow roads and pavements. The scheme is designed to allow over 55s to keep their independence with easy access to shops and services whilst providing 24-hour support. City Council Housing Officer Andrew Palmer told the Planning Committee that alternative sites such as Avalon House and the Cattle Market were deemed too small or too far from the city centre. Protests, including 80 letters of objection, a petition of 176 signatures and a 100-strong rally at the car park earlier this month, that were included. Ward Councillor Fiona Mather said the architecture of crude blocks like shipping containers was insensitive to the area. She said, "We need such homes, but the end justifies the means is not a planning argument. By no stretch of the imagination or creative use of words can Winchester residents be persuaded that it doesn't harm a historic street that should be cherished and enhanced." The 2,225 square metre building of up to five stories is the absolute maximum the site can take without clearly harming the conservation area, a council report. Excuse me. Can I go on? Right. After the meeting, Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for housing, said the debate needs to move on from what the building looks like to what the building is designed to do. Old age and possibly poor health will affect us all at some stage. This is a life-changing facility that will benefit Winchester's growing elderly population for years to come. The council is looking to create a pedestrian route through or around the multi-storey car park to boost accessibility, while a new bridge across the River Itchen has been considered in discussions over development at the Chesil Theatre. There is ample capacity in the multi-storey car park to replace the open-air site, Council Officer Andy Hickman told the Parking Committee on Tuesday. Work is set to begin next June and is due for completion in January 2017.
Book captures spirit of Austen's time. A Winchester author has turned the spotlight on the period of Jane Austen for his latest book. Barry Sherlock is a well-known local historian who has written several books on Hampshire's past. The chance discovery of a pile of letters between an 18th century husband and wife set him off to write about the Georgian period, a time of wigs, grand balls and classical architecture. The book is based on the exchanges from 1780 to 87 between Sarah Williams and her husband Philip, who was chaplain to the Speaker of the House of Commons. Sarah was a mother of four living in Winchester while Philip was London-based, a 10-hour coach journey away. The letters stopped abruptly in 1787 because Sarah died in childbirth. They capture the spirit of the times when Winchester was described as a town of opulence and gentility. The book evokes the spirit of the cathedral city and includes the fear of smallpox, schoolboy rebellions, taxes on maidservants, raucous sections of guards, and a small boy in his first trousers exhibiting a piddling to astonished onlookers. He was researching the history of a lost church in Abbotsworthy when indirectly he heard about the cache of letters held in the archives at Winchester College. It was an accident, really, when you get involved with the research, you go from one thing to another, said Mr. Sherlock. Now, around 6 years later, the speaker's chaplain and the master's daughter, a Georgian family and friends, has been published. The archive comprises around 500 items and has never been so thoroughly researched. Mr. Sherlock, 71, of Marston Gate Hyde, said he is interested in the 18th century period when many of the foundations of modern society were in place. It was a period of the Enlightenment with all the elements of the modern world. We were not living in a medieval theocracy, but of science, reason, and rational thought. There was a modern feel to life. People were more free than in Victorian times. People were quite joyful.
Proposals unveiled for £150 million hospital. New centre could revolutionise healthcare. Hospital chiefs have given the public a first look at plans for a new 150 million critical treatment hospital, which could change healthcare in Winchester. Plans for the 10-acre site on Greenfields near North Waltham went on show at an exhibition in Basingstoke last week. The state-of-the-art hospital would be one of just two of their kind in England and the first to offer 24-hour consultant care. The hospital would treat patients in a critical or life-threatening condition, with staff dealing with major trauma injuries, heart attacks, strokes, and other emergencies. And it will have specialist emergency department consultants available 24 hours a day. Emergency departments at Winchester and Basingstoke will be retained, but maternity units at both sites will be downgraded to become midwife-led, with consultant-led maternity care available only at the critical treatment hospital. Commenting on the public exhibition, Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandlers Ford, said it was still early days and the Health Trust had some way to go in making a case for the new hospital. Among those viewing the proposed plans were members of the North Waltham Action Group. Christine Rowley, a member of the group, said, "The hospital will have to borrow £150 million for this project. At the moment, we are hearing about lack of nursing staff and money problems at the Hospital Trust. How can they afford to get themselves into even more debt? This is the wrong time to be considering this." Meanwhile, Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate Jackie Porter has launched a petition which has so far attracted 2,000 signatures, demanding maternity consultants stay at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The maternity plans were revised in 2013 to welcome low-risk mothers after pressure from obstetricians, according to Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust's maternity lead, Michael Hurd. He said the new complex will prevent emergency care from being sucked into distant units in Southampton and Frimley. And there's a photograph of Christine Rowley and Lucy Henry, who's also a member of the North Waltham Action Group, while they were at the exhibition. And there is also an artist impression of the new critical plans of the proposed new critical treatment hospital site.
This piece is headed Cathedral Revamp for Return of Bible, a new exhibition to house 12th century artefact. The article is accompanied by some very interesting drawings of the new exhibition at Winchester Cathedral, which will house one of its most revered historical artefacts. The south transept will soon be transformed as part of a redevelopment to house the 12th century Winchester Bible, largely funded by the £10.5 million Heritage Lottery Fund grant awarded in July 2013. The grant would also be used for essential conservation works due to start in the summer if the remaining £3.3 million of the £20 million needed can be raised. Part of the roof at the southern end will need to be removed because of extensive water damage, and the lead windows, medieval timber and decorated bosses will have to be treated. It is not yet known how far the damage has spread through the original paintwork on the bosses, dating back to the 1500s, said Receiver General Annabel Boys. I'm a great believer in the cathedral's history and doing what we can to keep as much as possible, she said. Currently on show at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, the Bible is believed to have been commissioned in 1160 by Henri de Blois, the Bishop of Winchester, from 1129 until his death in 1171. It will form the centrepiece for a new exhibition, Kings and Scribes, Birth of a Nation, split across three levels, which will pivot around the development of the book and feature touchscreen interactive display boards. It will be housed in the scriptorium on the ground floor, while lifts will take visitors to the Morley Library Archive Collection Gallery on the first floor, featuring a day in the life of the monk. Ms. Boyes said, one of the major issues we've had is getting people up and down there because of the steep stairs. So we're actually coming up with the idea of putting in a lift and it's going through one of the vaults and one of the triforium areas. The triforium on the second floor features discovering the bones, the famous mortuary chests, said to include the bones of Anglo-Saxon kings, which experts will be examining over the next few months. The second mini-exhibition, Decoding the Stones, will look back on how and why the cathedral was built. It's a real wow moment. You look out and it's just wonderful, Miss Boyes added. It's about extending our reach to all ages and people from all backgrounds. We did quite a bit of market research for users and some of the comments were really interesting. Some thought it was a hidden space that people didn't go into. We did some work and told people about what our plans were and they were blown away with what was going on. The cathedral has this wonderful rhythm of life which we can show them through this exhibit, and I think it will be nice for people to experience that.
Surgery to reopen later this month. A Winchester doctor's surgery is set to reopen after it was shut without warning amid safety problems. Springvale Surgery in Kingsworthy is due to open its doors once again on February the 23rd, following weeks of emergency works. Fire and electrical problems forced doctors to close the doors just before Christmas.
Bride devastated as fire damages dress. Wedding plans on hold while couple live in hotel. Just weeks before the big day, a Winchester couple's wedding plans have gone up in flames. The dress is wrecked, money is running low, and their home is damaged after their tumble dryer caught fire a week ago. Rob and Sam Jay of Spitfire End, Winnall, have been put up in a hotel by Housing Association A2 Dominion whilst the damage is assessed and repairs done. The fire started after the fan in the tumble dryer stopped working, Mr. Jay, 31, said. He is partially deaf and registered disabled and said the only way he knew there was a fire was because of the special alarm fitted in the flat. I'm having nightmares, he said. I had to run through the kitchen to save our cat, Bella. It spread really quickly. Although the two already share a surname after Miss J changed her name last year by deed poll, they are due to get married in a couple of weeks. Miss J, 30, said her wedding dress had only arrived a day before the fire and is now smoke damaged. I will have to get it dry clean, she said. I'm devastated. We were going to get married next year, but at Christmas we decided to bring it forward. I have got family coming over from Ireland for it. Miss J, who suffers from anxiety and depression, said the couple have spent their wedding fund to pay for food since the fire. Anna Burridge, A2 Dominion's Assistant Director of Housing, said they were doing all they can to help. She said, "We're sorry to hear about the fire in Rob and Sam J's property. We are providing free alternative accommodation for the couple until they're able to return to their home, which is currently being repaired as quickly as possible. We will always do as much as we can to help our residents when situations such as this arise." As the Chronicle went to press, a decision was expected to be made as to whether the couple can move back into the flat. And there are two photographs with this article, one of Rob J and his fiancée Sam, and another of Sam holding up her wedding dress.
Charity for Homeless gets £300 cash boost. Winchester Trinity Centre has been handed a £300 donation from a national community fund. Galaxy Hot Chocolate gave the sum to the charity to help raise awareness and improve facilities for homeless people across the city. Tim Cork, fundraising manager, said, "As the nights get longer and colder, the value of a hot meal cannot be underestimated for both physical and mental well-being of those we work with. This donation from the Galaxy Hot Chocolate Fund means that we can now provide more hot meals, warm drinks and other practical support over the winter period." Michelle Frost, spokeswoman for Galaxy Hot Chocolate, said, "We know that across the UK and Ireland, smaller charities and groups struggle to make ends meet, despite the efforts of a huge number of warm-hearted volunteers. The Galaxy Hot Chocolate Fund aims to give them a helping hand and hopefully inspire more people to get involved with local community groups."
Green group to step up pollution cause. Green campaigners have pledged to win hearts and minds in the battle against pollution as Winchester fails to meet its targets. Efforts to reduce carbon emissions have had little or no effect on business and may not be reaching the city's affluent population, Winchester Action on Climate Change heard at its annual strategy meeting last Saturday. Output in the district dropped by 11% between 2004 and 2012, according to the latest available figures, meaning the City Council's aim to cut 30% by 2016 is unlikely to be met. Commercial electricity use is up on 2005, while domestic consumption has dropped by 1.6% since 2007. The environmental charity is planning a demonstration in the city centre during this winter's landmark climate change conference in Paris. Wealthy Winchester residents could be polluting more than their share, members said during focus groups, with online shopping, greater ability to travel and consumption of imported goods on the rise. Christine Holloway, the group's director, told the Hampshire Chronicle, "People have got the money to make the changes, but on the other hand, if you have the money and everybody you know is well off, it's more difficult to think, do I really need to spend this? They've got into the habit of thinking it's all right to fly halfway across the world to New York to do your Christmas shopping. Businesses are either so small that they haven't got any time to think about it, or so large they don't take any notice of us." She praised Winchester City Council for making carbon reduction a priority, but said its slowness in implementing change was very exasperating. WIN ACC agreed to focus on winning hearts and minds over the next 5 years, from lobbying politicians and school outreach to taking more direct action. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment, said the City Council works to cut emissions on its own responsibilities, such as park and ride buses, but cannot dictate to others. "We can't influence people's behaviour hugely," she said. "That's probably what gets WINAC a little frustrated, because we can't say, this is what we're going to do. We can say, we'd like it if you did this. What we can do as a council is bring together those parties like WINAC who try to influence people and put out that message."
Angus shows he's a model engineer. He devoted more than a year to a model car project, and now a Winchester teenager is reaping the rewards with international recognition. Angus French of Main Road Littleton has built a 50-centimetre by 35-centimetre radio-controlled Land Rover from scratch and taken home a silver medal and junior cup from the Model Engineer Exhibition and Competition. The King's School pupil carefully crafted the model from metal and wood as part of a weekend club run by former Professor of Chemistry at Southampton University, Patrick Hendra. The 14-year-old also appeared on BBC TV's The One Show to show off the car and talk about his award. I started it in November 2013, so it is nice to win something after spending so long working on it, he said. It would be nice to have a career based around it, probably in engineering. His tutor, Mr. Hendra, who is also event secretary for the Eastleigh District Model Boat Club, said, Angus will turn his hands to anything. I'm chuffed for him. I'm really pleased that he has achieved so much, he said. When he started, he was all fingers and thumbs, but now he is a first-class workshop technician. The only thing I have to do is give him advice. Now, Angus has started to build a multi-rotor drone, which is similar to a helicopter and can be used to hold cameras and take aerial pictures. His mum, Jackie, says he's always busy and enjoys spending time in the workshop. I dread to think what they come up with next, she joked. It's a very good achievement, and it's so unusual to get someone this young reach this standard. Angus has been taken under Patrick's wing, and he has just gone from strength to strength. When you look at the detail, he has done an outstanding job. And there is a photo of Angus with his Land Rover, which looks totally professional.
Superstore offering free power for electric cars. New charging points for electric cars have been installed at a Winchester Superstore. Tesla has opened the supercharger stations at Sainsbury's branch at Badger Farm, giving free power to adapted vehicles. George L., Tesla's UK director, said, We're very excited to partner with Sainsbury's to continue the expansion of the country's fast-charging network for long-distance travel in electric cars. The opening comes as the County Council is set to revamp its charging stations at the South Winchester Park and Ride, about a mile from Sainsbury's Badger Farm. The Park and Ride charging points that opened in 2010 have recently been taken out as they are outdated. A County Council spokesman said they will be making way for a new rapid charging point as part of our recent rollout. The council, with Scottish and Southern Energy, that's SSE, have opened points last year at Romsey Rapids Leisure Centre in the car park and a car park at Civic Way North in Fareham and in Andover, Ringwood and Farnborough.
New three-storey home wins approval. City bosses have granted plans for a new house amid warnings it will completely transform a private Winchester road. Frank Devoy is set to extend his bungalow in Hillside Close takedown and build a three-storey house on sunken ground. More than 40 neighbours sent objections to Winchester City Council, citing loss of privacy from an overbearing modern house. Councillor Jane Rutter, the owner councillor who voted against the plan, said they would completely transform the area. It's going to be out of character, she added. Neighbour Mike Keaveney added that the whole community is up in arms and 80% of residents had formally objected. Ahead of the decision to back the scheme, Councillor Frank Pearson said, the new house is 21 metres from the neighbourhood. That's a very long distance unless you're using binoculars or you've got very good eyesight. I can't accept we're talking about overlooking at that sort of distance.
Gateway scheme raises concerns. Residents form action group to have their say. concerns are growing over plans to redevelop a gateway to Winchester as residents fear new office blocks could spoil their neighbourhood. A residents group has been formed in the station approach area to voice fears over loss of open space, overbearing buildings and traffic disruption on already congested roads. Winchester City Council wants to build a modern office space, including a six-storey block on the Cattle Market car park, to attract new businesses to the city. Station Area Neighbourhood Group, comprising around 25 residents of Worthy Lane, Hyde Close and Gladstone Street, was formed last week in an attempt to give greater voice to local concern. Steve Tilbury, the City Council's Corporate Director, told the Town Forum last month that Winchester could miss the tide if plans are not drawn up soon. But officers have moved to involve residents early in the process, after a storm of protest against their approach to public consultation in the past. Officers will meet residents, landowners and local firms over the next few weeks to gather opinion, with their feedback steering community workshops and a design competition for architects. Steve Harborne, who helped found the action group, said, "Most of us are just getting the feeling that they already know what they want to do, and this is just a bit of gloss. Time will tell whether it turns out to be true or not. Certainly, decisions seem to have been taken already. What I would like to see is a genuine approach at dialogue that takes on board many of the residents' points of view." Station approach is expected to be a key topic at the Council's new Major Projects Committee, established in the aftermath of the Winchester March. A City Council spokesman said bosses have always consulted thoroughly on major projects and made changes to plans as a result. The spokesman added, "But we always strive to do better. We have listened to calls for improvements, and our consultation on station approach shows that we want to involve people early in the process. No decisions have been made about the future of the station approach area. The consultation will help to shape proposals."
Brewery chief speaks out. The brewery chief behind controversial relocation plans has said there is no alternative to moving his firm onto a green field near Bishop's Waltham. David Butcher, director of Upham Brewery, defended expansion, which could see the firm move from Stakes Farm to a meadow on the outskirts of the town. As previously reported, the proposed move has angered residents who say it will depress house prices and further endanger the busy Winchester Road. Speaking to the Hampshire Chronicle at a public consultation last Thursday, Mr. Brewer said, "We know it's going to be contentious, but we've been searching for 18 months to find a suitable site. We wouldn't be taking the most difficult route if there was an alternative." Brewery bosses say the proposed site will let them access the area's water, vital to the beer's taste, and maintain their local identity. The road will see 54 journeys a day from lorries carrying beer, boosting output from 12,000 to 60,000 casks a year.
Car mobile phone use disappointing. Hundreds of people across Hampshire have been stopped for illegally using their mobile phones whilst driving. In the last week of January, 285 people were stopped and received penalty notices. Among the excuses officers heard were, "I wasn't using the phone, I was videoing a car that cut me up." "This is hypocritical, but I hate people using their phones while driving." "I was on my phone talking to my mate about American football, as it's a boring drive." And a driver playing games on their phone in a traffic queue said, "I was bored." Hampshire Constabulary Road Safety Sergeant Rob Hurd said, "These results are disappointing and show that many people still do not understand the dangers of using a mobile phone whilst driving." "The majority of people know they should not be using their phone whilst driving, but don't seem to understand what a huge distraction it is Drivers are four times more likely to crash if they are using a mobile phone while driving.
Children celebrate having lovely reading nest. It may be a small rural school, but that won't stop it from having a big celebration. Itchinabas Primary School has launched its new library and children have been unpacking around 100 new books. We're so excited because the children now have a good resource that they didn't have before, said head teacher Amy Deer. The library was previously located in a small room, which Miss Deer said made it impossible to teach whole classes at once. Over Christmas, it was moved into a wide corridor, which runs the length of the school. Miss Deer said, "It looks fantastic. The children are going in there and doing library skills lessons. We have got new books to rejuvenate it, and we are looking forward to getting more. We're going to be looking to see how we can open it up to parents to come in too." The library has been named the Reading Nest, thought up by Matthew Duke, age 5, who linked the bird-themed class names. Shelving has been donated from Henry Beaufort School and £850 has been spent on new books. And there's a lovely picture of quite a large group of children of various ages looking very smart in their school uniforms with their red sweatshirts, all holding up, looking delighted to be holding up the new books.
Beware council tax scam warning. Winchester City Council is warning residents about a council tax scam in and around Winchester. People are receiving telephone calls informing them that their tax banding is incorrect and they could be entitled to a refund. Residents are then told it'll cost them £55, but the council will reimburse them. They are also asked for their bank details. A city council spokesman said the council was first contacted in early December about the scam, but there have been no reported incidents since. The council spokesman added, "Our advice is, if you are contacted, do not give out your bank details over the phone. Notify Hampshire County Council Trading Standards and the police, and we will continue to monitor."
Ice Mile is just dropping the ocean for Kate. It may be only a mile, but it's a daring swim that can be fatal. Just 109 people in the world have braved the dangerous Ice Mile mission, and now a Bishop's Waltham woman can add her name to the elite list. Wearing just a swimming costume, hat and goggles, Kate Steele's Friat has risked hypothermia to swim a mile in waters below 5 degrees centigrade. Finishing in just under 33 minutes, Kate, who went without a wetsuit or any specialist creams that help open water swimmers keep warm, became only the 110th person to complete it, ratified under international rules since 2009. But for the 45-year-old, it is a drop in the ocean as she prepares for the first ever ice swimming world championships next month in Russia, the destination of the wartime Arctic convoys. Kate, who took on the Ice Mile at Andark Lake, the scuba diving centre near Burlesdon, said, "I had trained hard and just focused on the swim. It was incredibly tough and took so much out of me. The water was 3.9 degrees centigrade and wind chill 1 degree centigrade. I swam a total of 1,650 metres in just under 33 minutes. My sport team were amazing and I couldn't have done it without them. They provided safety cover while in the water and as soon as I completed the swim helped me to get changed into lots of layers of warm clothing and to recover. Once I started shivering and shaking, they knew I was starting to warm up." Kate, a Hampshire County Council employee, added, "I have been open water swimming for quite a long time. I like the feel and the buzz. It's a challenge and I wanted to do it." Now Kate of Ashton Close is preparing for the World Championships in Murmansk. "Training is going well and doing the ice mile was a big boost. I train in a pool 3 times a week and outside 5 times, she said. Kate swims in local rivers such as the Itchen and the Hamble, as well as in the sea at Hill Head. Her support team were Rory Fitzgerald from Timsbury near Romsey, who is also going to Mamounts, Heather Lunt, Aaron Froome, Matthew Johnston and Lou Walker, plus others from Andart Diving Centre and photographer Terry Scott. She said Andart Lake is a great venue for open water swimming and the staff have been very supportive. She added, although I do get some curious glances from the divers fully kitted in dry suits as they emerge feeling cold, while I get into the water in just a cosy. Last year, Kate came second in the winter swimming in Spring's Festival in Jinan, eastern China. And there's a picture of her with her arms in the air after her successful swim.
800,000 earmarked for roads, care and schools. Civic chiefs hail ambitious programme in an era of austerity. Hampshire civic chiefs are set to splash out £876 million on schools, roads and bridges over the next 4 years. It comes as the Cabinet this week also agreed to recommend freezing council tax for the sixth year in a row. The near £1 billion capital programme will see big investment into schools, roads, broadband and extra care places. Cabinet members praise the council for still being able to invest such substantial sums. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, said 5 years ago there were fears that such programmes would be stopped amid the austerity drive. Around £180 million is earmarked for new schools and buildings between 2015-18, providing 11,300 more places. Some £101 million will go on major repairs to schools and other county buildings. In the Winchester area, £8.6 million is scheduled for a new primary school at Barton Farm. And near Eastleigh, the same amount will build a new school at Bawdy Green. 700 extra care units will be built with £26 million, with £6 million to extend the programme to young adults. For roads and bridges, £136 million has been set aside. On council tax, the bill for the average Bandee property will be £1,037.88. The final decision will be made by the full meeting of council on February the 19th. It affects people living across Hampshire, except in the unitary authorities in Southampton and Portsmouth. Council leader Roy Perry Pictured said he believed Hampshire had set the third lowest council tax in the country. The county has seen a £102.5 million savings programme to 2015 and has been making cuts across its services, including recently to bus subsidies. Councillor Perry said he had three priorities: the hard-working families of Hampshire who look to us not to add to their burdens, the people who use council services, especially the 1,000 children in council care, and thirdly, the staff who will receive a pay rise for the first time in years. Councillor Sean Woodward said, "It's fantastic we've been able to freeze council tax for 6 years at a background of losing half our government grant. It is a tremendous effort." He said, taking inflation into account, the council tax had fallen by 20% over the last 6 years. The meeting heard that an extra £12.5 million had been found for children's services.
Call to stand up for Stanmore. Efforts to rejuvenate Winchester's poorest estate will come to a head at a community conference this April. Stand Up for Stanmore will set about tackling low community engagement in what is one of Hampshire's most deprived neighbourhoods. Parts of the former council estate are in the bottom 7% in England and Wales for education and the 20% for child deprivation. Stanmore's Community Association wants to raise funds and generate practical ideas to involve disaffected residents. Rachel Aaron, chairman, said, "Winchester's overall high levels of affluence and achievement effectively mask Stanmore's more substantial deprivation and limited opportunities. Our problem in Stanmore is that whatever we try, we can't get enough people from Stanmore to get involved in doing anything. We're always searching for things that might spark their interest, because, in the end, Stanmore will only get better if the people in it get together and want to make it better together. The conference on Friday, April the 24th, in Stanmore Community Centre, we'll hear from speakers, including sustainable food expert Zeb Mayfield. The association is looking for more contributors with experience of energising communities. Anyone interested is urged to call Ms. Aaron on 01962 827717, or email stanmorecommunity@gmail.com.
That concludes the items for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And particular thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
Michael Wilde.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye. And do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.